Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
As far as I can see, I always want to get in the Irish team. And that should be every young player's dream and ambition in this country. And if you're playing in a place where you're not going to get the opportunities in the big games, that they're the ones that get you picked. They are the ones, the Champions Cup games are the ones that get you picked. You need to be playing in a team and starting in a team for those games. It's as simple as that if you want to play in the Irish team.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was 25 years ago this week when news broke of the Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky scandal. In this episode of the Indo Daily, recorded last year, Fiona Sheehan and guests take us back through the details of that scandal.
Today on the Indo Daily, sex, shame and salvation, how Monica Lewinsky took back control.
At the age of 22, I fell in love with my boss. And at the age of 24, I learned the devastating consequences.
So Monica, she actually took to Twitter recently to talk about the most terrifying day of her life. And what she was referring to was January 16th, 1998. And that was the day she went to meet an older colleague, Linda Tripp, for lunch in the Pentagon City Mall in Washington.
So like me at 22, a few of you may have also taken wrong turns and fallen in love with the wrong person. Maybe even your boss. Unlike me, though, your boss probably wasn't the President of the United States of America.
When she got there, she sat down to meet Linda Tripp, but she was suddenly ambushed by FBI agents, and she soon discovered that the lunch was actually a carefully orchestrated sting operation. So she was then taken to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, and there was more FBI agents waiting for her there. She was questioned for the next 11 hours. She did get a couple of breaks. She was threatened to 27 years in jail. And she got to make a phone call. She called her mother, who traveled from New York by train. Ken Starr later wrote in his memoirs that the operation was dubbed Prom Night by FBI agents. And he said, for an hour, Monica screamed, she cried, she pouted and complained bitterly about her scheming, no good so-called friend.
I was branded as a tramp, tart, slut, whore, bimbo, and of course, that woman.
That was Katie Byrne, writer with the Irish Independent, talking about a critical point in the Monica Lewinsky affair. I'm Fiona Sheehan, and you're listening to the Indo Daily. Today I talked to Katie about Monica Lewinsky's reinvention after the scandal. But first, Larry Donnelly, NUI Galway law lecturer and author of The Bostonian, The Life of an Irish-American Political Family. Larry Donnelly, can you give us a brief part of the history of the Monica Lewinsky affair, which is a very, very convoluted episode entirely in American history?
Yes, Fiona, and I'll try to do so as quickly as possible. To do so, I have to proceed on two tracks. One is that in 1994, a woman named Paula Jones filed a lawsuit against Bill Clinton on the basis that she had been sexually harassed by him while he was governor of Arkansas. In the course of that litigation, her lawyers decided to pursue behaviors in this area that Clinton had been known for and came upon, through a woman named Linda Tripp, who was friendly with Monica Lewinsky, the revelations that or the accusations that he had had an illicit relationship with her. And the Paula Jones lawsuit brought to light some of that. And Bill Clinton was deposed in that lawsuit and contended that he did not have sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
The other track here is that an independent counsel, a guy named Ken Starr, was appointed to look into all sorts of dealings of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton going all the way back to Arkansas. But in terms of this incident, he also took into account what was happening with Monica Lewinsky. Again, Linda Tripp, a friend of Monica Lewinsky, who basically told investigators what had been going on, what Monica Lewinsky had told her. All of that culminated in the release of the Starr report, which found that Bill Clinton had committed perjury in the context of the Paula Jones lawsuit when he said he did not have sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky, and also that he had obstructed justice in the sense that he tried to control Lewinsky's testimony and the testimony of others with salient information to events. With the publication of the Starr report, that gave the Republicans, who had all the solid majorities of both the House and the Senate at the time, the fuel they needed to file for impeachment. And he was convicted. He was impeached by the House of Representatives by a wide margin in 1998. And then he was tried to be removed from office in January of 1999 on the basis, again, of perjury and obstruction of justice. That did not meet the required two-thirds majority, and he survived the scandal, as it were.
As you no doubt heard, you get to work in the West Wing as of this morning.
So, Katie Byrne, how was she portrayed at the time? Do you think and that's a very wide open question, because she seemed to be the subject of dramatic ridicule. She was the Scarlet Woman. Very poorly portrayed right across the American media, from the comedians to the news. So what was it like at the time?
At the time, it was relentless bullying. I think plain and simple, it was schoolyard bullying across the board, all the way to the talk show hosts.
Monica also said that President Clinton would often compliment her on her figure. He would say things like, "Oh, you look skinny today." You know, if you didn't think this guy was the biggest liar in the world before. I'm
sorry. There was a sense, in one sense, she was portrayed as this arch seductress, so kind of canny and manipulative. And in another sense, people tried to make her seem very silly and naive. So I think that was the two main portrayals of her. But ultimately, a punchline.
Well, over on CBS, Shania Twain had her big musical special. I felt sorry for Shania. See, that brings up the age-old question for guys. Who do you watch? The nice girl? The pretty girl you can take home to mom? Or the cheap slender girl you know puts out, "Everybody goes for Monica"?
She likened herself recently enough. She said she was the patient zero of public shaming. And I think that's fairly spot on.
And it was an era before social media, so it's almost hard for us to grasp that. I can't imagine what it would have been like now. But this was mainstream media. This wasn't any online anonymous trolls.
And also, this is before the term slut shaming had entered the vernacular. So we didn't even have the architecture of mind to understand what it was that we were doing, which is, and also it was a time when the woman was always blamed in any sort of, you know, marital breakdown and all the rest of it. So yeah, dark times.
What impact did it have on her at the time? She has spoken about just being directly suicidal, that she felt the only way that this could all come to an end was if she killed herself.
It was that dark for her. And then she also spoke about, there was a good 10 years when she was borderline reclusive. I think she tried to get jobs within the kind of comms charity sector and was constantly turned down, just explained that she wasn't quite right for the role. And then that led her to doing the more kind of, you know, media focused stuff. She tried, there was a little stint in reality TV. She was a spokesperson for a weight loss company. There was a handbag line. That was actually her first outing. So I think in that situation, when you can't get a straight job, mm-hmm. you're kind of forced into those type of roles, which I think just compounded this idea of her as this, like I said, like a punchline.
The turning point, what would you say was it a Was it a national movement, or was it an individual act that she undertook herself to begin to both get people to acknowledge the way she was treated and also change their perception of her?
I would say the behind the doors turning point for her at a personal level was going to the London School of Economics and doing her master's there. I'd say that gave her a lot of time to think and kind of helped her construct her thoughts and all the rest of it, because just shortly after that, she did that that famous essay for Vanity Fair on the culture of humiliation. And I think that was absolutely the turning point. It was like a 4,000 word essay. I think it's an exceptional piece of writing. And it was also so prescient, because that essay came out, it was about a year or maybe 10 months before John Ronson's book, You've Been Publicly Shamed. So she was so ahead of the curve. And I think once that came out, we started to actually discuss the impact of public shaming, of trolling, of online bullying. And then she followed that up with that TED talk. She got a standing ovation for that TED talk she did. And again, that was also on the subject of shame. And shortly after, Brené Brown did that famous TED talk on shame. So again, she was just, she sniffed the wind. And I think she's continuously done that now over the last, over the last 8 years or so. She's constantly on the money. And she's proved herself to be a very, a frontier thinker, actually.
All of the things that we now regard as no-go areas, abuse of power, othering, she was that woman, trolling, bullying, loss of agency, public shaming, slut shaming. She suffered all of them, really. Do you think that did Me Too, that movement, change anything for her in that regard? Or do you think it was already going in that direction for her?
I think it was going in that direction, but it gave her a kind of a place. It opened her up to explore what had actually her experience and look at it from the point of view that while she had agency, there was also a sense of her being a victim there, because there was a 27-year age difference. So she looked at it from the point of view of power dynamics. When you have a wealthy, privileged, powerful older man and a much younger woman, what's going on in that dynamic? And does a woman in that situation have complete agencies? I think it definitely, the conversation had opened up, and more people were talking about situations that more women were talking about situations like that they'd been in. So I think that, yeah, it certainly opened it up for conversation.
So she's now very much shaping the narrative. She's a producer on impeachment. She's also said that she has ensured that some of the warts and all aspects that the writers were tempted to leave out, that she said, no, that they need to be included. So it's put her very much front and centre. Where do you see her going from here? Do you see her continuing to be a kind of a media personality in the background, or do you think we're going to see her in more public roles from now on?
I think she'll continue being a social crusader. She has her own production company now, so I think we're going to see a lot more documentaries. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a book in the next 5 years. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if she runs for some sort of political role. I think that would be a possibility for her. I don't know in what guise or, in what district, but I think that could certainly happen for her.
Larry, when this scandal broke and it played out, did it damage Bill Clinton's image in the US, or was it, as he coined the phrase himself, it's the economy, stupid? His presidency was successful because of the economic performance. So therefore, is that what weighed most in people's minds in the States?
I think there's no question that an awful lot of Americans still clung to that. It's the economy, stupid. And certainly the Clinton presidency was a time of great economic growth. And by and large, the American people were very happy with how he performed in office. I do think, however, that there were a lot of people who were, quite frankly, disgusted by the tawdry nature of this relationship. In particular, the fact that Monica Lewinsky was so young and the power imbalance between the two. So ultimately, I do think it did cost him political. More to the point, it cost Al Gore politically in the 2000 election. I think that there was a sense that they'd had enough and they wanted some distance away from Clinton Gore. And remember, they were tied at the hip as president and vice president. So I do think that that did have a certain amount of impact. There can be an interesting debate about during the 2000 campaign whether Clinton could have been employed to better effect, in particular in states with heavy African-American populations, because African-Americans regarded Bill Clinton as the first black president, and they weren't too bothered about what he got up to in his private life. But the last thing I'll say is, you know, there is something in the American people, there is still that almost puritanical, in some quarters, inability to distance private life versus public persona. And I do think among those people, this did hurt Bill Clinton.
What about here in Ireland? He made an enormous contribution to the peace process, sometimes took very brave and controversial decisions, but then used them as leverage to put pressure, particularly on the Republican side. So do we basically deify him in Ireland because of that, or does this affair cloud our judgment on him?
Well, I certainly think his work on the Good Friday Agreement and his administration's work certainly earned him the loyalty of Ireland and large segments of Irish America. There was a famous event in 1998 at the White House where Irish and Irish American people gathered to pay tribute to Clinton for his work on the Good Friday Agreement. And it was when he was under serious threat, when members of his own party were calling him into question, when it looked like he could go down, that is, he could be removed from office. And these people steadfastly stood by him and celebrated this extraordinary achievement. So absolutely, I think Irish people's perception of Bill Clinton was forever altered by that work. In the eyes of some, he could do no wrong. I also think culturally, and maybe this is strange to say for an American point of view, when people there still think about Catholic Ireland, I think a lot of people here were willing to keep separate private versus public life, unlike in some quarters of the United States.
With the passage of time, we're now in the Me Too era and the post Me Too era, and this issue of that affair and his treatment of Monica Lewinsky does come up a lot in more recent times in interviews. Do you think it has cast a shadow over his presidency now, more so than it did at the time?
I'm not sure about how to answer that question because memories fade. And when we look back at the presidency, I do think that. What I will say is this. I am not so sure that Democrats would now stand by a president who did something like that, no matter how ideologically compatible they might be, no matter how successful a president he might have been. I'm just not so sure that Democrats, in particular, women, would stand by a president accused of those sorts of things. And again, I refer to the power imbalance, the intern barely out of college, and the president of the United States. I think that would have been an awful lot for a lot of elected women to say in 2021 that they're okay with that.
And Bill has spoken about this himself in a 2018 interview with Judy Woodruff, where she spoke to him about his view of the scandal.
Sensitive question, President Clinton. Your relationship with Monica Lewinsky, you said your impeachment was inappropriate, it was wrong. You've also said that you paid a price, that you left office $16 million or so in debt. Today you're aware.
That was the least of it. I mean, the price that I paid mostly was the pain I caused to my wife and daughter, and feeling terrible about the exposure she had and the way I let my staff down, the cabinet. I mean, it was awful, but I had to live with this for
another person who was obviously intrinsically involved in this entire affair was Hillary Clinton. Do you think that her subsequent political career was damaged as a result of it, in particular with the 2016 presidential campaign, where she was up against Donald Trump, a guy who was no moral authority really on anything, and yet he was able to throw mud back at her, bring Bill Clinton accusers into the front row of the audience at debates, and really just just kind of muddy the waters and say, well, if you think I'm bad, look at what her husband has been involved in.
Well, I think the first thing to say on that one is Donald Trump's greatest political strength is that he plays the game by very different rules to anybody else. He tore up the rule book and started all over again. And the thing is, most Americans were happy when it comes to Donald Trump to allow him to play by very different rules. In terms of everything that happened, I think that, yeah, it's inescapable that it impacted negatively on Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, a very poor political candidate, not a politician, the actual opposite of her husband, but a woman who's extraordinarily able and I think would have made a very fine president. But she was held to account and viewed contemptuously by an awful lot of Americans. And part of that, I think, was down to the fact that here she presented as a crusading feminist, yet stood by throughout all of this. And I think it made a lot of people, women in particular, made an awful lot of that swath of America say, this woman is a hypocrite.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him and I respect him. And I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together. And you know, if that's not enough for people, then heck, don't vote for him.
She's power hungry. She's willing to do what it takes. She says that she's this and that. But when it comes right down to it, she stood by her husband when he was accused of those awful things. I think it's inescapable that it impacted negatively on her presidential prospects. And something I'm afraid will lead an awful lot of Americans to dislike her forever.
So ultimately, with the passage of time, do you think that people's perception of Monica Lewinsky has gone in one direction and the Clintons in the other, which, you know, is probably justified in hindsight?
I think it's arguable. I think people, even Democrats and even friends of the Clintons, are very careful to separate everything that's happened personally versus what they achieved politically and substantively. And I think that they're very careful to separate the two and always put in caveats when they're assessing their legacy for that very reason. When it comes to Monica Lewinsky and we think of the Me Too movement, Monica Lewinsky, I suppose, is the first real Me Too moment in American society. And again, I think it's a mark of how we've progressed as a society that I don't think Bill Clinton would have survived had these such allegations come to light in 2021. And again, I think that the figure in this that we really need to keep our eye on is Monica Lewinsky. She's been through an awful, awful time. Imagine if that was your daughter. And I think that to her great credit, she's used it to all sorts of good effect. It seems like she's a happy, capable person. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing beyond politics.
That was Larry Donnelly and Katie Byrne. Larry's book, The Bostonian, The Life of an Irish-American Political Family, is available in all good bookshops now. I'm Fiona Sheehan, and today's episode was produced by Mary Carr, researched by Tabitha Monaghan, recorded by Gavin Hennessy, with sound design by John Smith. Archive clips courtesy of Independent.ie, TED Talks, CBS, NBC and PBS. You can listen to The Indo Daily wherever you get your podcasts.